It is almost like a Khan kind of thing, like Kirk and Khan.
Go ahead, try it, Jen.
Naomi.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
Naomi.
Is my impression of it.
Don't make me laugh.
Very funny.
The woman that we're seeing is actually Trisha McMillan, played by Zooey Deschanel.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the lady that Arthur totally bombed it with at that flat some time ago.
Yes, we're chugging into Exhibition Space Station.
There we go. That works. Okay.
With you on you. Okay, but like there's a lady who's just like, the hot gold spaceship with its revolutionary improbability drive has been stolen. The president, and they cut to the president, and he's like, I hereby kidnap myself. Let's do this thing. And he swings away on the bottle of champagne that's attached to the ship that he's supposed to like break on the bow. But he's like, woo. And then like the second in command, the vice president, catches the bottle and she's like, with her space age haircut that doesn't make any sense. And then we cut to a different TV screen where there's more exhibition happening.
It's talking about the president, Zaphod Beeblebrox, who is played by Sam Rockwell.
Yes. And he got beaten out by such and such to the...
He beat out his rival, Huma Gavula, which ran on the Don't Vote for Stupid campaign.
Which is great. And then they're like, he's currently kidnapped. And then they cut to the presidential brain care specialist.
Yeah.
And that's played by...
Jason Schwartzman.
That's like, right. It's actually very interesting. And then she's like, can you step away from your ego and come do a thing over here? We got hitchhikers. And it stops. And that's all you get.
Yeah.
Jason Schwartzman says, Zaphod's just this guy, you know.
It's so good. And I could have stood for like 5 or 6 more minutes of that.
I know. But Zaphod comes
out. It's another German guy with an accent. He's a specialist. You guys, we only ever watch one movie. That's the last episode, guys. If you need to go get some Christmas.
So Zaphod comes out in a towel and these like, you know, a gold lamé underwear.
Got a bathrobe on and he's got a towel around his head draped around his neck.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got like a button up white shirt, like blue booty shorts and some gingham type socks.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, we've got some people. And he's like, grabs a gun. He's like, I'll go take care of him. She's like, look, I'll send Marvin. And then like, shh.
Right.
From this ceiling.
This is where we're introduced to Marvin, the manically depressed robot.
Oh, so good.
And he has got this large robotic head mm-hmm. and a small little body.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know who's walking around in that suit, Naomi? Which I feel is a little bit of a travesty.
Like a waste.
It's a waste, yeah.
It's not that he doesn't do a great job.
Right.
Because, I mean, if you watch the movements, it's fantastic, mm-hmm. the entire film in terms of like body
acting.
Yeah. It's Warwick Davis.
I know.
We mentioned, here's the thing. Last episode, we had elves and mm-hmm. we were like, oh.
Yeah.
We wish they had been so much more.
Yeah.
Not because they weren't played fantastically, but they're like these unnamed characters who are like kind of castaways.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
yeah,
this is 2005, and we all know how good he is,
right? So,
but he did a good job.
Yeah, he did.
To be fair, there are lots of characters with actors inside of suits. It isn't just him inside of a suit doing one character. We've got Vogons all over the place and that sort of thing. So.
And none of those are famous people. It's not like freaking. I'm gonna name somebody famous. Hold on.
I just hope that Warwick Davis got like a large paycheck for that.
He was in the title sequence.
Yeah. I just hope that he also got paid like large amounts of money, even though his face wasn't shown or his voice wasn't said. So
Marvin's official title, I don't think it's ever mentioned in the movie, but in the book, it's Marvin the Paranoid Android.
I mentioned that earlier, but he refers to himself as maniacally depressed, I believe, in this film.
Right.
And there is and this is another Sean fact, there is an album, probably the most famous album by Radiohead, called OK Computer, and in there is a song called Paranoid Android.
Yes, and I don't know it, and I can't believe I don't know it.
You'd probably know it if you heard it, but the OK Computer part is because that's what Zaphod always said to the Heart of Gold in order before he started belching out commands.
Oh, yeah.
Is he would say, OK Computer, which is also why we have OK Google.
Oh, that's cool. All right, I'll take those Sean facts to heart.
Also, Marvin is voiced by Alan motherfucking Rickman.
Oh, yes. So he's like brain like a sauce. And he's always mentioning, he's like, I'm a genius and you're asking me to do like the most menial things. Mm-hmm. So like she gets down there. She's like, Marvin, we got some people in the hold. Could you go bring them up here? He's got the gun now. So he's going down. He's like, brain the size of a planet. And you want me to bring people up from the hold? Mm-hmm. And I think that if we were more to the truth of it, Data from Star Trek is a parallel for me to Marvin, just in that you are so vastly intelligent and yet you are used to be like, you are very strong, please lift that rock. And it's like, no, you should be doing something far more important than the thing you're being asked to do.
Right.
I think they stream to that in this. And it's actually the closest to the trueness of the character within the books. Who's actually giant through the entire books.
Mm-hmm.
Not the last one. Maybe not the last two.
Right. And then at some point, the Vulgans recognize that the Heart of Gold is out there. And they're like, oh, this is a stolen spaceship. We need to go ahead and, you know, grab that. Or is this a little bit later on after Arthur and Ford are brought up to the main deck?
Arthur and Ford walk through the happy doors.
Yes. And Alan Marvin exposits. He's like, isn't it awful? And I will wreck Alan's voice and I'm so sorry. But he's like, isn't it awful? All of the doors have been programmed with GPP.
General people personalities.
Yeah.
I also have one. Can you tell?
Can't you tell?
Yeah.
And he's just... I was a prototype. Can't you tell?
Yes. Yes. I love you, little depressed. So yeah. All of the doors have, and they describe it in the book. They describe, and I quote this at Jen like all the time, this poor lady. But I'm like, the doors open with the sheer anticipation of the joy they will bring into your life and close with the satisfaction of a job well done. So it goes, except it always does it. So no matter what you're experiencing, it's like, except that's not always appropriate.
And we've got lots of cleaning devices around this house that make a happy little chime whenever they're starting or when they're finished. And I always make the sighing sound after I'm done.
Yeah. I don't look. We were house sitting a house that has a fancy microwave. It's a very nice microwave. But when it's done, it's like diddly dink, dink, dink. And I'm like, look, that pizza was not that exciting.
The dishwasher at the house I'm staying at has that feature where it does a chime when it's done. And I'm just sort of like, okay, can we turn that off? It doesn't need to let me know that it's done. I'm going to eventually see it.
And I was probably going to leave the dishes in there for at least 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, so this is Arthur from that party that you absconded me from so long ago. And he's like, that's impossible. Mm-hmm. Zaphod is like, it's impossible. And Trillian, as we're about to be introduced, goes, not impossible, just highly improbable.
Right. Well, I think there's a moment when Ford and Arthur come up and Zaphod like jumps out and scares them. And Ford goes behind his towel because he doesn't recognize him at first because he's hiding behind his towel. And it's not until he drops that down when things kind of settle down. And after Trillian makes her point that he's like, oh, you're my cousin. And he's like, oh, you're my cousin. And you know,
that chick I knew from that party. And like, oh, no.
Yeah.
I think we get close to Arthur telling her that, like, you know, she's like, I was going to call you when I get back. And he goes, well, that's not going to be a problem now, is it? And she's like, what do you mean? And Zaphod's like, oh, so we got to deal with other stuff right now, and kind of cuts that situation off. I think he would have told her because he was halfway to telling her then.
Mm-hmm. But he kind of, there were things that came up again and again that just kind of made it more and more difficult.
Yeah, but he tried. And I feel like
he didn't try hard enough.
Okay. I can give you that partway. Because I feel like he started to, and then he was threatened by Zaphod, and so then he decided not to. But it's not like he didn't initially try. And her point about him needing, we'll get there. But like, I feel like it was close.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't perfect, but he almost got there.
Right.
I don't know. If the president of the galaxy threatened me, I'd probably back off.
Right. And that's when they, I think the computer comes up and says that they're getting targeted to be attacked because the Vulgans are like, oh, this is the Heart of Gold and this is a stolen spaceship and we have to get it back.
Right. So banter. Let's use the hyperdrive. And so like the ship's like Eddie, the computer's like, yeah, sure. Does a little turn and shoots away into hyperspace. And the Vogons, when the head Vogon turns to the little underling Vogon, is like, did they have the proper authorization?
No, they didn't. and give me the release form to pursue them. And then she does. She brings in this release form.
The guy running?
Yeah. And then he just slams it down and he just checks it.
Just one little check and it's done.
All the time I'm watching these Vogons and I'm thinking, they probably get paid time off. They probably get full medical coverage. They get a 401k pension, okay? Like, the gig can't be that bad.
It really can't.
Eddie the Computer is voiced by Thomas Lennon. You might know him from shows like Reno 911.
I know him from Over the Garden Wall. But yes, I do know him from Reno 911.
Who's he in Over the Garden Wall?
He was in the episode where they go to school and he's the guy in the gorilla suit.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah. So now they've made their escape and Zaphod is making Ford a pan-galactic gargle blaster.
Yeah.
Which is a fancy cocktail that I've talked more about in my life than I probably should because I don't make cocktails. But a pan-galactic gargle blaster has been described as having your brain smashed out by a slice of lemon wrapped around a gold brick.
There's like all of these different ingredients that you can't, that don't have any real world analogs.
Okay. To make a pan-galactic gargle blaster, you will need: take the juice from the bottle of an old jank spirit, which is like a similar name to something else.
So pretty much gin.
Probably. Pour into it one measure of water from the seas of Sangrenius V. That Sangrenian seawater, it says. Oh, those Sangrenian fish. So I think of a dirty martini. Mm-hmm. So like you'd take olive juice.
Yeah.
And you pour it. Allow 3 cubes of Arcturian Mega Gin to melt into the mixture. It must be properly iced or the benzene is lost. Gin and olive juice so far. And whiskey, you said?
Jenks is... I mean, if Jenks... Okay, so if they actually talk about Mega Gin, we can't actually use real world gin until we come to that part. So what was the first ingredient?
Old Jenks spirit.
Okay, so yeah, that would probably be whiskey. Whiskey, olive juice, gin...
And I salty ice cubes.
Salty
ice... Well, no, wait, no, just ice cubes. It must be cold.
Mm-hmm.
Allow 4 liters of Thalian marsh gas, so something to bubble through it, in memory of all those happy hikers who died of pleasure in the marshes of Thalia.
So we probably need to carbonate this, so maybe
But, like, marshes smell like sulfur, so, like, fart smell.
Yeah.
Over the back of a silver spoon, float a measure of qualactin hypermint mint extract, redolent of all the beady odors of the dark qualactin zones, subtle, sweet, and mystic.
Isn't like absinthe something where you put a cube, like a sugar cube over it?
Yeah.
Over the back of a spoon?
Okay, so you drip absinthe through a sugar cone into a cup of ice.
Okay. So we're talking about whiskey, olive juice, gin, absinthe,
farty
soda water.
Gosh, you know what? Let's retract the farty smell and go with maybe like a smoked thing. You know how sometimes they'll burn a piece of wood and like smoke a glass or maybe put like smoked salt around the edge?
Oh, okay.
You could do that.
Yeah.
But olive juice.
Yeah.
And absinthe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wait. Oh, hold on a second. There's more. Drop in the tooth of an Algolian sun tiger. Watch it dissolve, spreading the fires of the Algolian suns deep into the heart of the drink. So I'm thinking sun tiger. I'm thinking of like a fire. What is that cinnamon flavored whiskey? It's called a
Fireball.
Yeah. I haven't done Fireball, but that sounds like what it would be.
Right. Like a spicy whiskey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. More whiskey? Sprinkle Zamphor.
Do they describe what Zamphor
is? Nope. That's the whole direction. Oh, and add an olive.
Well, we got the olive juice, so.
Yeah.
It seems like it's almost a joke. Like, what's a Zan for? More than you'll ever know.
I don't want to drink that, Lydia. I don't want to drink the earth equivalent of that.
I think we need to find something that feels like your brain is getting hit with a slice of lemon wrapped around a gold brick.
See, I think that's why I liked lemon drops back when I did drink cocktails, was because it's vodka and lemonade.
Right. But I'm thinking of like, what is the tardiest thing that ever tarted in the entire world? And my first thought is sugar-free, like 100% cranberry juice.
Oh, that's really tart.
Yeah, but I love it. Like periodically, I'll just like, I just need like 8 ounces of this.
Really?
Yeah.
No sugar added type.
No sugar. But then I think about grapefruit. And I have never been a fan of grapefruit. So, like, I would think that a perfect cocktail for this that would mimic it, and I haven't tested this out, but it would be, like, ginger beer, tequila, grapefruit, because that's a very, like, ginger is pretty citrusy. Tequila goes well with citrus.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you rim lemon around the glass. So when you're drinking it, you don't sip it through a straw. You drink it from the rim, and so you get that lemon, but then you also feel like your brain is getting kicked with grapefruit.
Okay.
That's just a thought.
I
haven't tested it out yet.
I vote. Okay. All right. Physics aside, I take a piece of, Jen, I'm so sorry. This is so much about drinking. Okay. I would take a piece of rice paper, something thin enough that it will dissolve quickly, right? I would do a shot of, let's say, Fireball whiskey. Not a whole shot, like half a shot. This is a shot, okay? So even though it says drink carefully. Half a shot of Fireball. Let's do another half of, like, lemon vodka. We're going to float just a tiny bit of Bacardi on there. But before you put the Bacardi on, you're going to drop whatever that little wrap is, the rice paper wrap, full of Pop Rocks in the bottom. You're going to float the Bacardi real fast because you don't want that thing to melt. You're going to have to light it on fire. And then you have to, like, put it out by shoving it in your face and taking the shot and then chewing the rice paper full of Pop Rocks.
I think that could work.
I don't want to do it, but that sounds more accurate. And now we bring you back to our interpretation of the interpretation of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
So as Zaphod and Ford are taking this pangalactic gargle blaster.
And just screaming in the background.
Trillian takes Arthur into the kitchen.
For a cup of tea.
Yes. And it doesn't taste like a...
She says it resembles tea, but it's served in a martini glass. And this is our second martini glass of the movie. I'm like,
right.
Just because you're in space doesn't mean it has to come in a martini glass.
Right. Oh, and there's dry ice that's coming on the top of it. So, so yeah.
That's weird. On a brown liquid.
Right. And he points out the fact that, you know, she's being called Trillian. She's like, yeah, it's Trisha McMillian, but I shortened it down. He's like, I was thinking I was going to call myself Arthulian. And she was like, ha, that sounds really good.
This is a weird scene.
He's whinging at Trillian about the fact that she went with Zaphod because he said that, you know, do you want to see my spaceship? That sort
of
thing.
And then he had a spaceship and she was like, oh, snap, look at all this adventure I could have.
Right.
And then I think she makes a really valid point. She met a guy at a party who didn't want to be down for her adventures. She met another guy at the same party who was like, yeah, I'm all about adventures. And then she does, in a way that I find very compelling, she goes through the kitchen and she shows them all these amazing things. Like, here, look at this device. She sticks her face in a hole in the wall and this device detects what you're craving and then makes it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, sign me up for that.
She also, like, shows this, like, lightsaber knife that when you cut the bread, it toasts bread as it slices it. And it's like, yeah, I really like that.
The sound is actually sampled originally from the lightsaber. Skywalker Sound supplied that.
That is awesome. They were like, yeah, yeah. She waves it at me and she goes, woo, 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 woo. And then she's, and then she puts it away and it's like, just like a lightsaber.
Right.
Because it is.
Right. And like, there's all of these amazing things. And so she's like, you're going to really, he kind of was like, you know, self-defeating at this point. And she asks him, how badly does it hurt? And like, I mean, he's like, you could take this one of two ways. Mm-hmm. I take it as the obvious, like, how badly does it hurt to know that I was asking you to go on an adventure, even though I didn't really know you. Mm-hmm. Apparently, after one meeting, I trusted you enough after everything that you said that the audience isn't necessarily privy to, that I would go ahead and trust you enough to go to Madagascar with you. And I mean, but then he's like, I'm sorry.
Well, she's like, your chin, how much does that hurt? I think I have an aspirin in my purse. She goes to get it from her purse. Her purse topples over. Two mice run out. In the book, she has pet mice who escape.
Yeah.
But that's fine because she's like a scientist type. They never really get into it. She's just brilliant in this movie. But in the book, she's like an astrophysicist or something super fancy.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, mice. And then they're not thought of for another little while.
And when they all regroup back together.
He's all like, we're going to Magrathea. And they're just like, what are you talking about? And she's like, buttons aren't toys for the first time, which is said like three more times. It's great.
Yeah. And Zaphod pulls out this cube where he shows, this is where he shows them about going to Magrathea and
just exactly what deep thought is.
Right. So basically, it's this video about how scientists built this computer and they wanted to know, and these scientists specifically wanted to know the answer to life, the universe, and everything. And this computer was supposed to figure it out for them. And when they ask,
come back in 7.5 million years and I'll have an answer for you.
The computer is Deep Thought, voiced by Helen Mirren.
decadent.
Decadent. And when they come back, there's like this whole big hoopla. And
the little creatures who went to ask the question look like, and now it's 7.5 million years later, they've evolved a little bit. They're a little paler. Their eyes are a little bigger.
Right. And you have this whole crowd there with people with like, you know, like holding signs. They have these shirts that say think deep.
And I want one so bad.
Yeah. And when they go back and they ask Deep Thought about the answer to life, the universe and everything, she's like, well, I have an answer for you, but
You're
not going to like it. And so they were like, well, just tell us, what is it? And it's like 42.
What?
42. I've thought it over extensively. This is the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Well, no. Tell us what the question is. I can't do that.
I wasn't created to answer that question.
But I can create the computer that will answer that question. And then she goes into this beautiful soliloquy about it. It's going to be this gigantic organic machine that you will become a part of. It'll take all of these things, these organic materials, and she goes on for a while. And then she's just like, and it shall be called. End of video.
Yeah, it cuts out and they don't know what the name of the computer is, but they need to go to Magrathea.
Mm-hmm.
Because Magrathea that's the planet that Deep Thought is on, right?
Correct. Also, Sean fact, in the movie, Deep Thought's appearance is at minute 42.
Nice.
I love that.
I love it when, you know, people who are making movies think about those little details.
I love also in a similar vein where if they do a countdown, the countdown is significant. Like, If you're telling me that they can hold their breath for 30 seconds, then I'm going to start counting those 30 seconds. If you're under that, that's fine. You said 30 seconds max, right? But if you're like, we're counting down to 10, like in Fifth Element, when he's like, throw this, count to 10 or whatever. And so he does. And then he's just like, one, two. But then it's a count of like 30. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Right.
I have very few flaws with that film, but that drives me crazy.
Right.
Yeah. But like little hidden gems like that, minute 42.
Right.
Yes, please.
And that's when the secondary head comes out of Zaphod's. This isn't the first time that we're seeing it. The first time we're seeing it is when Zaphod...
hits the button to go. No,
isn't it the first time when Zaphod is threatening Arthur about
telling
Trillian?
Yes, that would be the first time.
Right. And I mean, like, this secondary head is completely different from the other...
It's in the neck of Zaphod.
Right.
The second time we've seen the head is when he hits the hyperspace button.
Right.
He's like... Wah! It's like his impulsive nature. It's
right.
Like his dickheadness.
His id, I think?
It's his dickhead. I mean...
Is it the id?
Yeah, you could. Ford asks him about it, and he's just like, well, they said that certain parts of my personality didn't fit in with being a president. Apparently, you can't be a president with a full head, a full brain, or whatever. So they gave him this second thing to, like, and that's the thing. Like, could you imagine it all mixed together? Like, that must have been impossible.
Right.
Like, if this is the more sane Zaphod.
Right. No, different in like, the TV show, wasn't it just, like, literally a second head on his body?
Yeah, it was a papier-mâché deal that just kind of bobbed next to him. And then I think maybe they might have switched back and forth every once in a while. But it was not.
It
was not good.
See, and, like, from a visual aspect, I like the fact that the head only comes out at certain points and it's hidden most of the other times.
And in the book, it works, too, because, like, at the party, it could be, like, pretending to be, like, a fake head. But, like, in terms of, like, in the moment, like, they could have them both interacting and talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But the TV show doesn't work. But I'm excited to see what they choose to do on the new series that's coming out because, like, it's a hard thing to visually deal with.
What if they put the second head on top of his first head? So it's like in Labyrinth where they have the
it's
little...
It's so stimulating being your head.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they initiate the probability drive, and that's when Hitchhiker's...
Improbability drive.
Yeah. Gets initiated by Zaphod's second head and third arm.
Yeah.
And and that's when the guy goes into why the probability drive was created.
Yes. And it talks about how the ship itself can appear and disappear through infinite points in space and then land on a specific probability, which is unreal. But like, as he's describing this and it's popping out of existence and we get a little infographic, it lands on a ball of yarn. Mm-hmm. With a little string of yarn trailing out behind it. And then we cut into the scene and they're all made out of yarn. They're all little chibi yarn thems.
It's adorable.
It's so cute that like I, who have tried to stop collecting stuffed animals, want them all again. And then Zaphod's like, is this going to happen each time? And she's like, in all probability, yes. And then Arthur's just, and Ford's like looking around just off to the side. And then Arthur's just like, I think I'm going to be sick. And Zaphod's like, do it in the waste bin. And so like he grabs this little yarn waste bin and then it cuts to real reality, like our reality, like not our reality because the dolphins are safe here. It's like solid live action and it's just this pole. As someone who hates it when you show me puke and pus and things, like I can handle blood and gore, but like I don't want to see fluids.
Right.
He just pukes all of this yarn and then he's just pulling a piece of yarn out of his mouth.
Something that I noticed that I'd never noticed before today was that the hand that, so he's holding the waste bin with two hands, and then his right hand keeps holding the bin at the very tail end of the yarn vomit. But very briefly, you can still see his hand that's holding the waste bin is yarn. His hand is yarn. But then when he's going to pull that string out of his mouth, that's a real life hand. And then everything transitions better. It's just this beautiful transition. They think of all of these little like details.
And I bet 90% of people didn't catch that.
I know.
Oh, I love that. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll go back and rewatch it because I want to see that again. Because
all
I was
of
like,
the details are what make this so responsible. No, it's not just the details. But the cameos make it rewatchable. Mm-hmm. Like there's so much that just draws you back in. Like you want to remember all of the lines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the challenging details on The Heart of Gold is all of those lights. They could only keep the set on for 8 minutes at a time. Otherwise, they would start exploding. It got too hot on set.
Wow.
Hopefully that's been corrected with the Hulu remake because the bright lights really kind of
make it pop.
Yeah.
You know what? LEDs are much more accessible now than 2005. I'm sure. I'm sure they've got higher grade movie quality LEDs.
Mm-hmm. And then you see them land at this planet and Zaphod's just like, it's Magrathea, but it's not Magrathea. It's actually a planet.
Oh, when Arthur's bending down, something pulls his hair and he yells at people, but it's not people. It's the mice.
Oh, yeah. But when they get to the planet, the first thing that comes out of Zaphod's second head is Hamagavula! And I asked Naomi, have you ever had anyone say your name like a swear word?
I had to say yes, because last episode I introduced you guys to my brother. And if you listen to the bonus episode, you might notice that we love each other very much. And that is very true. I would, hills and mountains I would traverse for this. I would go on a war epic hobbit journey for that man. But I tell you that developmental delays have a set of joys attached to them, as well as a set of difficulties. But I'm going to tell you this joy. If I make him mad in just the right way, he says my name like a swear word.
I've heard it.
And I try. I mean, we are grown people. I try really hard not to antagonize him, but we are siblings and we are human. And he comes after me sometimes. So I go after him sometimes. And do either of you guys want to imitate it? You both have heard it for years.
Naomi.
It is almost like a con. Kind of thing, like Kirk and Khan.
Go ahead, try it, Jen.
Naomi.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
Naomi
is my impression of it.
Don't make me laugh.
Very funny. Those are things my brother says to me when I'm being a jerk to him.
Ha ha ha.
I love him so much. I mean, like, we get these catchphrases. Lord knows you guys, if you've listened to more than one episode, you know that I have my own set of them. Like, we are not innocent in this game.
Right.
Okay.
So, do you know the history of this planet, Naomi?
Okay. So, after losing to Zaphod in the election, Hamagavula becomes the leader of, I forget the name of them, but this is a religious sect that believes in the great green Arkel seizure. An Arkel seizure is the actual technical name for a sneeze. So if you ever, but like, and they're awaiting the great white handkerchief that will wipe away all of the evil in the universe. So whereas the great green Arkel seizure is mentioned in the book, this character we're about to meet, Hamagavula, is played by John Malkovich. And the great green Arkel seizure is mentioned. His character was created for this plot. And I'm not mad. It feels like it honors the story. John Malkovich being an amazing actor in and of himself. Like, mm-hmm. that he can go from, like, I mean, he doesn't take himself too seriously. But if he did, I'd be like, oh, yeah, no, sir. Yes, sir. Whatever. Yes, sir. Right. But, like, when he's being hilarious, I don't know how in this role he manages to terrify me so much and still be, like, so funny.
Right. My note was, and this is kind of skipping ahead a little bit, it's kind of talking about that character, Hamaguvula, but I said, corrupted church leader is also legit scary, used to be a space pirate, and now works the tax code to his advantage? Because he's like, he has to be a nonprofit. And sorry, I've been watching like a lot of Maggie Mayfish's movies about Kirk Cameron Saves Christmas.
Oh, no.
And it's this whole big thing where they're kind of using like Christianity to kind of work around the U.S. tax code.
Oh, it's one of the reasons I was forcing Jen to watch a documentary about Scientology. And it's like, you have all this money and you spend it on abusing people who you are mad at.
Right. It's just like, you know, it just kind of screams. And I don't think that may not have been Douglas Adams' intention with creating this character. But it's just like with everything that has kind of like gone on in the U.S. as of late, it's kind of like this is a little bit like kind of hits close to home.
Well, certainly. And good satire tends to lend itself to any given time that it's interpreted, you know, right. Like you can apply it. You're like, oh, this was a big deal in the 70s or late 80s or mid 90s when all of this was being written.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
when Jesus says that the poor will always be with you, it's because rich people will always be hoarding their wealth. Sorry, that was Lydia. Never mind.
That was Lydia being incredibly accurate. And we are not going to excuse brilliance here. Okay.
There was a prevalence of and an uprising of mega churches in the earliest years of this millennium. And I think that Adams was kind of poking fun at that. But also, Sam Rockwell was also portraying his version of Zaphod based on a mix between
Mick Jagger,
yes, and George W. Bush. So there are little jabs at different cultures that are just included in this specifically.
Okay. So they land on the surface of the planet so Zaphod can go yell at this guy.
Right.
And Ford goes off. He's like, I feels really familiar. Have I ever been on this planet before? He goes to the opening of a restaurant, the door of a restaurant. The subtitle goes, Izzy, I-Z-Z-I-E. But Ford Prefect.
Right. It's like they're saying, hey, it's Ford. And it's like, oh, yeah, I've been here before.
And then he just outs on all these guys. Well, right. They all go into Hamaguvula's religious temple.
Yeah.
And they enter a religious ceremony. So it's like a sermon sort of situation. And they're singing a song about the great handkerchief and how it needs to come and wipe away everything. And then the song ends, the whole congregation really singing it. They're all in these these tissue themed outfits. And then Zaphod slow claps.
They're only showing their nose. So their like eyes and their head are covered.
Yes,
and they only show their nose.
And it's green with a little white patch on the back. And they mm-hmm. all sit down. And the guy comes up to Ford and she's like, not Ford. He comes up to Zaphod and he's like, hey, take a seat. And he's like, oh, okay. And they all three of them sit down in the congregation, which is interesting, you know. But Hamaguvula notices them in the crowd, but continues to give the sermon. And then he gives this the prayer at the end. And he's just like, a moon of the great green ackle seizure comes. May we have the tissues to remove from ourselves. He goes, and with your great name, that is like the word sound or whatever.
Alliteration.
Yes. And with great alliteration, may you come. And then instead of amen, they all go, achoo. But did you notice they take the back of the hood of the person in front of them, the white triangle that's been sewn into the back of the hood, and they sneeze into the back of the head of the person in front of them?
So what about the people in the front row? Do they have like...
sneeze on the floor. Yeah, just like the worst. But I was like, oh, lucky they didn't wear like costumes, like they didn't steal uniforms. Then they had nothing for the person behind them to sneeze on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the punchline.
What does he say after they all sneeze?
John Malkovich does this sort of wavy hand motion in front of his nose, sort of like this. It's like how a priest would, you know, like bless you with his hand.
Yeah.
And then he says, bless you.
That's good. That's real good, Jen.
Basically, when the sermon is done, Zaphod goes into Humma's like dining room table and they're all talking and Humma's being very like sketchy and scary. Like
he takes off his glasses and he has no eyeballs.
Mm-hmm. And then he sits up at the end of his table mm-hmm. and he doesn't have any legs. He just has these little like robot legs.
So he can skitter down the table all of like some sort of
spider,
like Tim Burton spider character. Mm-hmm. And then as he gets to the end of the table, the legs extend themselves to the floor. So fluidly, without like losing height at all, he just extends out to them.
Right.
And he's explaining to Zaphod why all of his complaints are stupid. And he's like, by the way, because his campaign was don't vote for stupid. He's mm-hmm. like, and by the way, you are stupid.
Right. He's super intimidating so much that Arthur kind of like says, Humma, Mr. Humma, we're not actually with him. We're just sort of, you know, getting dragged along.
We came here to worship you, he says.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Humma comes over to him. His legs extend so much that he's so much higher than Arthur that he looks down upon him and he's like, And then he moves away because he's like, he's full of bullshit. And then Trillian's like, no, that's not it.
Right. We're actually looking for Magrathea. And if you have any information, that would be great. And he's like, well, I might have something, and he pulls out like this red cube from his, and this is where
he pulls one of his congregation guy's noses off, pushes some buttons on the button pad underneath, his chest opens up, which is like this crazy detail, and he's just like, from my pirating days, and he pulls out a navigation cube, which looks like just like the memory cube of mm-hmm. before, and then he's just like, bop, 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 bop. In front of like,
but he's like, I need something in return.
Yeah, like you can see Zaphod's about to lose his like two minds about it. He's just like, I want it. Yeah. He's like, well, okay, there's something that I want from Magrathea. It's a gun. How will I know you're going to bring it back to me?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, Zaphod goes, my word is president.
Which doesn't hold any water for Humma Gavula. And so he's like, no, I think I'm going to take some collateral. But what is the one thing that Zaphod Beeplebrox cares about the most?
Is it going
to
be the ship?
No.
Is it going to be Trillian?
No.
Is it going to be a lifetime supply of pangalactic gargle blasters?
Probably not.
What is it going to be?
It's going to be that head.
And he tickles his chin until it, yeah. until he goes, and then he goes, what happens is he throws his head back to expose his second head.
Yeah.
And so like the first one's out of commission and the second one goes, uh-oh. And then you see this pan across all of Hama's, like, you assume like victory, like trophies.
Well, before that, there's this shadow scene where the second head is like, there's a saw, Humma with the saw, and then the second head like talking about how this is a stupid mistake and you don't really want a second head or anything like that.
Two heads is better than one.
Yeah, and then he like pans.
Double your pleasure, double your fun.
And then he pans across this like trophy mm-hmm. a la Guardians of the Galaxy.
Kind
of. Yeah. And you see at the very end, Sam Rockwell's head on this hula dancer.
Yes. And there's a handwritten sign with an arrow pointing up that says stupid. And he's just kind of bobbing back and forth. And he's like, you can't leave me. And that's the last we see of that god awful thing. Thank the Lord.
Yeah. And so they get the coordinates, but Zaphod's kind of out of it. And so they pretty much have to carry him back. But as soon as they come out of the church, who's there? But the Vulgons.
With the vice president.
Right.
And we cut past a blurb where they talked about how there was a species on the planet who evolved aerosol cans before they evolved the wheel because they had like six armpits, which is pretty funny. But it means the entire planet is littered with aerosol cans. So they come under fire. Trillian and Arthur hide. Of course, Zaphod is too out of it to be able to do that. But Ford runs out of a club. He'd been talking to a lady he used to have affiliations with. And then he grabs Zaphod, like throws his towel over him, drags him behind the same pillar everyone's hiding behind. Trillian grabs an aerosol can, drags him out into the front, and is like, I'm going to take, you better watch out. Stand back. And all of the Vogons are like, okay. Oh no. And the head Vogon from somewhere far away turns to the second in command, or the vice president, and is like, is that going to hurt him? And she's like, nah, I think that's an aerosol can.
Yeah. And they were like, fire. And so they all swarm on Trillian with mm-hmm. Zaphod, and they capture her and they let the president go. And so pretty much Ford, Arthur, and Zaphod are able to kind of get away as Trillian is captured by the Vulgons.
Right. And freaking Zaphod starts running towards the navigation instruments and he's like, Magrathea! And Arthur's like, no.
Right. They get back onto the ship. Trillian is not there. She's been taken by the Vulgons and mm-hmm. the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And Zaphod's like, we're going to go to Magrathea. And Arthur's like, no, we need to go and get Trillian. And so there has to be like a side ship that we can get because they didn't know how to like initiate the probability drive and actually get there.
Well, okay. So Arthur grabs the red Magrathea cube and is like, no, ship, We want to follow that Bogon ship. And the computer's like, I'm sorry, my navigation has been taken offline. Cut to Zaphod on the floor where Arthur's thrown him. And he's just like, little guys, what are you doing under there? And there's two white mice chewing on wires.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, how can we follow the ships? And he's like, Eddie, the computer's like, well, I got a little shuttle. It's... Oh, no, no. Okay, so now they're in the shuttle, which is cute and fun to drive, I think is what he says. And they're hitting buttons. They don't know what to do. And then there's a screen where they've just hit a button, and then the screen flashes, please don't push that button again. And I think that should be more in our lives.
Yeah.
My life would have been so much easier if somebody had been like, if you do that again, this whole system goes down. And I'd have been like, then I won't push the button again. This seems like good advice.
Yeah.
Somebody should write that down, you know?
Right. And eventually they get this tiny little steering wheel pop out.
It's a slice of a donut, and it comes straight at Arthur's face.
And the way that they're acting about this ship reminds me of, like, someone asking you to, like, do something on their phone. And you're like, okay, how do I navigate your entire phone? Because it's not the one that you navigate every day of your life.
Mm, it also feels like driving your drunk friends home.
Yeah.
Where you're like, no, No, I got that. I mean, yeah. Like, not that anybody in there was competent, but, like, everybody was throwing out useless advice. And it's like, look, I'm better equipped. Yeah. But they shuttle bump, and Marvin's, like, making pokes at them about it. He should have been the one driving.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever.
Right.
So we go to a planet surface where a cute little crab crawls out of... Oh, do you have a Sean fact, Jen?
I do, about the crash of the pod.
Oh, hold on a second. So there's a puddle, mm-hmm. and a cute little crab crawls out of it. It's one of our sparkle glitter crabs. And he goes, yay! Yip, 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 yip. And you get this kind of sentience out of them, which is super depressing.
Right.
And he kind of hop skips, and he's like, yay! He sees the spacecraft. He's like, I'm going to get rescued. And he's like, yip, 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 yip. And then he hops over to where, now, Jen, you can come in with it. Like, they're crash landing.
Oh, well, it's not the sound of the door crashing on the crab, though that is both adorable and sad at the same time. But when the pod crashes, it makes the sound that is sampled from the plane at the end of In the Flesh, which is the first track of Pink Floyd's The Wall, which is a really deep cut. I understand that. But Douglas Adams was a personal friend of Floyd guitarist David Gilmour, and he even played at one of their shows.
Wow.
Sean facts are amazing.
Sean. And he said, his text, did you see it? It was like, I couldn't fit it all in.
Mm-hmm.
Shock Talk is going to be crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. But then the door opens and it squishes the crab because he's right. Like, I'm getting rescued. And then he's just dead.
Yeah. So Stephen Fry comes in and he says, when asked how to rescue someone from Voguesphere, this is the planet of the Vogons, the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy simply says, don't.
I think, not to overcorrect, but I think Ford says, I asked the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy what to do when you're trying to rescue somebody from the Vogons, and it said, don't.
You are correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, it would have been Stephen Fry saying it first anyway.
Right.
So canonically, you are correct.
But that's okay.
Okay.
So they get out of the ship and they're heading towards, like, the area where Trillian is being held.
Okay. Wait. I have a point at the end of at the end of this scene. I have a point.
Okay. Okay. So, but it is the scene that I'm currently talking about where they're walking through this empty field. Okay. So they're walking
before
through.
They get through the field. While they're still on the mound of the crash, Ford fits a helmet onto
Zaphod. Yeah.
And it's got a little spinner cup at the top. And he pulls out a lemon from a special little pack he's got. And he's like, this is called a thinking cap. It'll give him some zip for about 10 minutes. And he, like, whirs the lemon juice into Zaphod's brain. And he's like, oh. And he looks like he's got two cells to rub together.
Also, Ford Prefect's bag is like Mary Poppins' bag. It just has everything.
Yep, I'm down.
Yeah.
He's a good traveler. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got a Swiss Army purse. Mm-hmm. Like, it's got so many things.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing.
So after they get Zaphod's brain working, they start walking through this field, and then suddenly someone gets slapped in the face. I think it's Ford.
What are we going to do? Arthur says, I think, whoomp.
Yeah.
And he's like, ow. And they're like, what? And he's like, something just hit me. And they're like, no, there's nothing here. They start walking again. And he's just like, well, I think we should, whoop.
Yeah. And then he says, something hit me again. And then Ford goes ahead and comes in, and he says something. He says, I think.
Arthur, I think.
Well, no, Ford does it at one point.
Ford does it first.
Ford does it first? Okay.
Yeah, and then Arthur goes, Zaphod, what do you think?
Zaphod comes out, and he's just sort of like, I think. And then he gets slapped in the face.
So, these little square paddles, like, it almost looks like, I mean, it's almost fleshy, but also root-like, and it just is a flat paddle that smacks you in the face anytime you think something. And so, like, we need to figure out how to rescue Trillian. We need to think. We have to get out of here. Nobody think anything. Nope. And everything's like square up. They're like, okay, don't think anything. Mm-hmm. And I counted to five. So it's a 5-second pause, and then all three of them get thwacked at the same time, and they realize there's no way to get out of the field without getting thwacked, and so they start running.
This scene reminds me of that moment in The Simpsons where Sideshow Bob is, like, trying to go after Bart, and this is probably the second instance after he just got out of jail, and he, like, unbuckles himself from the car, and he gets out of the car after he's just, like, gone through an entire field of cacti, and he gets out of the car, and as he's stepping on all of these rakes.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just whacking him in the face. Oh. Yeah, and it's just, like, and there are all of these rakes around him,
whack.
And it doesn't matter where he steps. Yeah.
Whack. Okay, so then they book it through the field, they're getting whacked. I have two thoughts.
Yes.
And I know we need to move along, but two thoughts. One, the reason the crabs are so dumb is because they live right next to that field.
Mm-hmm.
It's a practical thing. If they were super smart crabs, they couldn't live there. Second of all, why do Vogons prioritize protocol over active thinking? They live right next to the same field. They evolved there. Thinking is disadvantageous.
Right. My note was a caption on the movie that said Zaphod imitates Kung Fu cries.
Because, yeah, as they're about to exit the field, he's like, wah, wah, yeah, wah, wah. Insensitive, but hilarious.
Yeah. And so they get outside of this, like, city that is just rows upon rows of cubes. It just reminds me, like, all of these buildings remind me of their spaceships. They're just these tall rectangles.
They are the spaceships.
Yeah. But when they come down onto the planet, they're all, like, lined up into these cubes.
Mm-hmm.
Very bureaucratically.
Yeah, very Borgish.
Yeah.
So we cut to Trillian being processed, I believe, at this point. And she's being a Lady Vogon. Our first Lady Vogon is like, are you Trisha Vogorio's Bigliar from Bergblaga? Oh, gosh. I know how you love it when I make up the alien words from whatever the we're watching.
It's wonderful.
Is it Trisha Ugloglio Budufu from Berbiga?
It was like, nope, it's Trisha Marie McMillan from Earth.
I can't find that.
There's a call sign for Earth that they use throughout the
Seanfax.
ZZ9. Seanfax says the relevance of sector ZZ9 is the fact that in the UK, if a person has no place to live, no fixed abode is what they refer to it as NFA, then the postcode is recorded as ZZ993VZ. So Trillian and Arthur come from sector ZZ9, and thanks to the Vogons, they are also NFA because their home has been destroyed.
That's so sad. And she's like, I can't, there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this is pretty much the moment where Trillian realizes, or is pretty much told, that Earth has been destroyed.
Yeah, and because she does tell her that it was destroyed to make space for the intergalactic hyperspeedway. And Trillian goes, what idiot would sign off on destroying a planet full of people?
Mm-hmm.
And then it cuts to Zaphod's face.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We do our first office scene
mm-hmm.
where they like, where Marvin lends Arthur. He's like, Arthur.
Lends.
He's like, hey, lend me a hand. And he busts through the door and he's just like, where's Trillian? And he's like, are you looking for the Office of Robot Arm Repair?
Yeah.
Because he's brandishing it like a gun. And then I think it might cut back to the paper being slapped down in front of her, and she, mm-hmm. Trillian's like, it says love and kisses, Zaphod.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even read it.
Yeah.
He just signed it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see her heart breaking. And this is where I think Zooey Deschanel really shines, because this is the part, this and the gun scene are unparalleled for her compared to anything else in the film. These are the times when she really has her kind of arc where she's just like, she was done with Earth. She wanted to be gone. She wanted adventure. Mm-hmm. She knew everything she wanted to, had everything she thought she needed from Earth. And then she realized that with Earth gone, she doesn't have a home.
Right.
And I mean, here's the point about adventure, is adventures end sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Or they should. I mean, like, I'm sure there are people who've got continuous adventure in them, Ford Prefect style. But the majority of us don't. We have to have, like, a base to come back to, even if it's just for a little while. Even if it's just knowing that it's there, you know? I'm not trying to make it too deep, but you should be able to come home.
Right.
Also, the first opportunity that Trillian has to speak with a woman, even though it's not of the same species, and it's still about a man.
Mm-hmm. Well, it turns into about a man. Does that break the Bechdel-Myers?
Yeah.
Oh,
I would say so.
I mean, it's not like if you really want to get like into it.
There's a scene she cuts away from when who would sign without who would sign.
Yeah.
Another scene and then back. And then it turns into about Zaphod. I think it nearly passes, although I have not read anything about the Bechdel-Myers test.
Yeah.
Sean can fix this on that one.
So it cuts back to Arthur still with Marvin's arm, Ford and Zaphod, and they
they've sent Marvin back to the ship.
Right. And so they go, all three of these guys are like in a specific place for like a prisoner release.
Yes. And Martin Freeman, God bless it. He goes, I'm British. I know how to cue.
And he gets right behind him and he's just sort of like, nope, 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 nope. He's just sort of like standing.
He's standing in line. Yeah. That's what we're good at, yeah. I guess.
And then he goes to Zaphod. He's like, you're the president. Can't you do something about it?
Ford then says, presidents don't actually have any power. They're there to distract from it.
Yeah, and that's when Arthur gets the idea.
No, it's Zaphod.
Zaphod?
Zaphod whips off his helmet and he goes, oh.
Okay.
He's like, hey, hi, I'm the president. Nice to meet you.
And they like kind of like cut in line, basically, up to the front where...
We're on their way. Guess who they pass? Mm. It's a Sean fact.
Oh, it's the original Marvin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He's just in line, twirling around, being depressed, being amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. I love that Easter egg. Yeah. Anyways, they make it to the front where we meet our second Lady Vogon. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, and they're like, we need to get out this prisoner.
Yeah, she's like, oh, you need to get a prisoner release form.
And so they run and you see them all scribbling out.
Yeah, Ford is going through the guide about how to fill out the prisoner release form. Mm-hmm, and Arthur's the one who's filling it out.
He's reading it off the Hitchhiker's Guide. So
yeah.
It's just like, mark everything on the right column. Not that one.
Yeah. And then when they take it back up to the lady, she's like, oh, no.
She's not permitted for a release at this time.
Yeah. I was like, oh, she kidnapped the president. And it's like, no, the president is here. It's a total misunderstanding. She's like, oh, you need a presidential release form. Those are blue.
If you notice, the first one's like a periwinkle, which is debatably blue. And then the second one is like more of a sky blue. And I was like, I have worked in that office. You jerks. You could have made it so much easier.
Right. And during this whole scene, we're cutting back to Trillian ultimately like going through her doom and where she's, because she's been sentenced to
You've been convicted
killed.
Of
Thank you.
Kidnapping the president, and the punishment, you shall be fed to the ravenous bug bladder beast from Trog. And she says it with a nice little roll.
Yeah.
I can't do that as well. Ravenous.
Right. And so she ultimately is like lowered down into this pit.
Yes. And so they turn in the form. She's like, a presidential release form. Okay. Like, and she grabs her stamp and stamps it. And then one of the scurry guys, like the guys who get the paperwork there, super fast, which must be bottom wrong. Like, I'm scurry guy, like runs the paper. And he's like, the head guy's like, the charges have been dropped. She is released at this time.
Yeah, and the vice president's there hanging out and she's like, you know, making side commentary about little things.
She's pretty. She's skinny. She's pretty. Mm-hmm. She's lying.
Yeah. But then when she gets released, she was like, what? Zaphod's here?
Well, then that's it. We'll go get him. And so like you see poor Deschanel being lowered all ragged and half chewed. Like not like literally, but like the way that your clothes get chewed in comedies, but none of the rest of you get chewed. Mm-hmm. And then we cut to the three guys sitting on a bench with like arrows that must be the outdoor, like the outtake. And the doors open and she is yeeted like a toaster out a window into a dumpster. She is yeeted into the hallway. And Arthur's the first one. Okay, now call me a sucker, but if someone stands up when I come into the room, I instantly feel honored. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I always do that. I want to be a person who returns that favor, but Arthur stands up and he's like, Trillian. And I'm like, Arthur. And then Jen's like, Rocky.
Before she hops in, I think that there's a really good just like 2-second description just through action and a little bit of dialogue between these three guys. First, Zaphod says, why are we here again? Which is so Zaphod.
Right.
And then Arthur is shaking his knee because he's anxious. It's like, he's got the restless. He's got the
crazy knee.
Yeah.
It's like we're waiting for Trillian. And yeah. Zaphod says,
No, he didn't say we're waiting for Trillian. Ford stops Arthur's knee, and then Zaphod says, no, seriously, like, why are we here?
Oh, no,
and then she falls, she gets pushed in through the door.
I thought it was what are we doing? We're waiting for Trillian. Who's that? Knee grabbed Chuck Turin.
No, it's really just as easy as, why are we here again? He has no clue what they're doing in that building.
I thought he didn't remember who Trillian was.
No. Sean. He knows who Trillian is. He just can't remember why he's there.
Okay, fine.
But
I'm going to disagree with you on it, but I agree to disagree with you on it.
All right. There are going to be a lot of scenes that I could show and point it to you, but I'm not going to.
Oh, no. We're going to have to watch one of my favorite movies again so that we can debate about like the thing or memories of it.
This time you get to pause it and like actually point out those things.
Yeah. Instead of like watching it and scribbling notes like a madman.
Mm-hmm. Now I feel like Charlie from that scene in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where he's pointing to all of the little post-it notes.
The crazy red line meme.
And then I knock on the door and I say, Carol!
I have no idea what that is.
Is that the scene?
I think so.
It's the one where they have Pepe Sylvia. Pepe Sylvia, Pepe Sylvia.
I don't watch Always Sunny.
I don't, but like I was like, okay, I need to actually see what this scene is because I hear it through like cultural osmosis.
Okay.
So
I'm glad you did. But now I know a little bit more.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
and Jenna, you probably are right. You're often very, very right. But I'm also right sometimes.
It's true.
Okay.
So Trillian comes out and she's angry at everybody. She's angry at Zaphod for signing off.
She goes straight for his face. Yeah.
She's not angry at Ford. I should clarify
No, yeah,
that.
Ford's
yeah.
fine.
Ford's fine. He's cool.
Ford is vastly innocent.
Yeah.
Chaotic neutrals usually are.
True story. Okay, we'll debate that at the end.
But she's also angry at Arthur because he knew about this. And
she goes and she slaps mm-hmm. Zaphod straight in the face. Mm-hmm. Like, whoop, and he's like, what was that for? And she goes, love and kisses? You signed it and you didn't even read it. My planet was destroyed because you thought somebody wanted your autograph. And like he's getting shuffled mm-hmm. out to the side, I think probably by Ford. But then Arthur comes over and she's like, and you knew about it. And he's like, Zaphod threatened me. And she's like, grow a backbone, Arthur. Mm-hmm. And then she stomps out and it's glorious.
And then they get back onto the Heart of Gold and Vice President Lady still is not able to get to the president.
Yeah.
That's her character arc. Is she's just like, I just need to get the president back so I can do my job.
Dude, okay, so Head Vogon is like, they've made me personally mad, right? He goes, I'll pursue them myself. And she's like, yes, finally, excellent. He's like, ready my ship. And she's like, oh. And all of a sudden, wong. And he's like, well, that's 1 hour for lunch.
Yeah.
I think I'll have soup.
They get an hour for lunch?
That's insane to me.
It is. I mean,
that's so British.
I know.
Do British people, somebody come on to tell us, do British people get an hour lunch?
Probably. I mean, they're getting stimulus checks in the middle of a pandemic when we're not. Sorry, I'm a little bit salty.
Nice.
So
No.
Going back to the movie.
Okay, so yeah. She's taking a shower. Mm-hmm. And oh, did you notice he walks in? He's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then he like takes a more one hour half step in. Yeah. And he's like, just stands there. And she's like, no, it's okay.
I would have been like, get the fuck out.
I would have been like, hey, give me a minute.
Yeah.
But he walks over and he's just like, I want you to know I'm very, very sorry. And she's like, could you give me a towel? Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, it's a solid door. Like, you can't see into, you can see her shoulders and her wet hair, but she's still like incredibly hot, which, okay, fine.
And seriously, like, if he wanted to, he could just like, he already kind of barged his way into the room. He could barge his way over to get in a peek.
I mean, I'm not.
Sorry.
I have vowed to not commend men for not being rapey.
Yeah.
So good, I mean, good on him, but is that good enough? He should have been like, oh, sorry, and then completely retreated the room.
Yeah.
That would have been ideal. I mean, like, if the mistake, you know, right. I accept people with mistakes, but like, you walk in.
Yeah, it feels like a very 2005 kind of move where, you know, we're going to, like, we got to get something that's tantalizing in here or else, you know.
If she's not vulnerable to a place where he could take advantage, how do we know that they're compatible sexually? What? No, that's not.
Yeah.
That's not.
She did that with Will Ferrell in Elf, too.
She did that? I know you said there was a scene similar in Elf. I've only seen Elf once, a long, 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 long time ago.
She starts singing "It's Baby, It's Cold Outside," which is kind of a rapey song.
No, it's not. We can fight about it.
Okay, but...
But in out of context.
Out of context.
Yeah, it
but
sounds,
it is her.
It
she thinks she's singing it all by herself, and then Will Ferrell just like, oh, I love this song. I'm going to sing along with whoever's in the shower.
No, thanks.
And
the
she
whole point
out.
Is you get to choose who your baby hanging out cold outside
so,
it is with.
So... Why do people keep putting Zooey Deschanel into these, like, shower scenes?
Because she's one of those brunettes who look good with wet hair.
Okay.
And I'm mad about it because when my hair is wet, I look like Uncle Fester.
She's pretty, she's skinny, and she's lying.
And her hair looks good when it's wet.
Okay. So moving on to this. Okay. So like the important thing in this scene is the fact that she asks Arthur for a towel and you should always have a towel on you because it's always helpful.
Is this not also the scene where he goes, I just wanted to say that if I'd gone with you that night, if I'd gone with you to Madagascar, we both wouldn't be here right now. And I'm like, I'm already salty, right? Because of the shower. Right. I'm like, brah. We'd both be dead right now if I'd done what you'd asked me to is a terrible reason to be together.
Right. Also, they're like the last two people on Earth at this point. Like, well,
there's no on Earth right now.
they're the last two Earthlings. He could always pull the, well, we have to, you know, procreate our species.
Well, she kind of says that later.
Yeah.
We're almost there.
Yeah. But it's also like, I mean, and then I point out as we're watching this, I mean, he's technically correct.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it romantic.
I know. But then you pointed out, and that's the best kind of correct for that Vulcan on that Futurama episode. And that's why I always bring out that line. It's like, you're technically correct. It's the best kind of correct.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. So we walk into the bridge now of the Heart of Gold. Mm-hmm. And every time Zaphod uses the word zarking, he called Ford Prefect a zarking frood, which we should totally start using like right now.
Zarking frood?
Zarking frood.
Nice.
Ford, you zarking frood. Like, and zarking means f***ing. So he's like, because I know that because this next scene he goes, zarking A.
So then what does frood mean?
I think it means...
Mother?
No, I think it... Well, let's say mother, because my brain takes it to someplace unacceptable.
Zarkin Frood, motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Fucking mother, but it's all about context.
Yeah, and so that maybe the mother part is after the adjective instead of before, because languages are particular sometimes like that.
Yeah. Let's just assume the babblefish was doing the work for us.
Yeah.
And it didn't allow for any kind of slur.
Yeah.
That was inappropriate outside of the swearing that I do appreciate.
Right.
That's how swearing works.
Right.
The only swearing that counts is the stuff I appreciate.
Right. And so they get to Magrathea.
Yep. They hit a button.
Yeah. And when they get there, that's when they get this holographic face of someone very specific.
It's Simon Jones.
Who?
Simon Jones portrayed Arthur Dent in the BBC radio and television adaptations of Hitchhikers.
Oh.
I know. Arthur showed up.
Nice.
We've now concluded part two of our review of 2005's The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, a plotter. Thanks for traveling with us this far, though we still have one more part to our discussion of this British science fiction comedy. Still desiring more absurdity and irreverent content to send your boredom out an airlock? Midnight Movie Night has released a discussion on possibly the best B-movie ever, Miami Connection. And... because of our awful suggestion on a recent guest appearance to review the movie Across the Universe, I Drink Your Podcast just released a bonus episode on the movie Frank. Check out this week's release notes for links to these episodes. Hey, this is your audio engineer and Galactic Presidential Inauguration attendee, Jen. Did you know that Shocked and Applaud is commercial-free? Give us money to find out how! Search for Shocked and Applaud on Patreon or click the heart icon at the top of shockedandapplaud.com to support us for only $1 per month. You'll get access to our unbleeped episodes and we'll sigh happily in satisfaction of a job well done. We'll return next week for the conclusion of our review and stay tuned soon for this month's episode of Shock Talk with Sean and Madeline. It's quite possibly the most geeky episode yet of the after show you didn't know you didn't need. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.